Welcome to the Association 4.0 podcast, your association's no-fluff playbook to navigating and thriving in Industry 4.0 or the digital marketplace. Each week, we bring expert insights to help you and your association stay ahead of the curve.
Hello, my name is Sherry Budziak, and I am the host of the Association 4.0 podcast. I'm also a co-founder of .org Community and founder and CEO of .org Source, a consultancy to associations. Today, my guest is Garth Jordan, CEO of the American Animal Hospital Association. AHA was founded by seven leaders of the veterinary profession in 1933. From its inception, AHA has focused on promoting high-quality standards for the rapidly evolving sector of small animal private practice through accreditation and other initiatives. These standards were developed to raise the bar of veterinary excellence and have undergone numerous updates throughout the years, always reflecting current industry standards. Also with us today is Sharon Rice. Sharon is the Managing Director of Business Strategy for .org Source. Sharon has spent a majority of her career in the association space. Most recently, Sharon was Vice President of ASCM, the Chicago-based Association for Supply Chain Management. She is .org Source's expert on strategic and business planning, growth strategies, and comprehensive product development. Welcome, Sharon and Garth. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Great. So today we're going to do something a little bit different than the typical interviews that I've been doing. And I've been asking each of my guests recently, including the two of you that have recently participated in this podcast, about how the role of associations in society is changing and if it's expanding, contracting, is completely being reshaped. If you know of other organizations that are kind of revisiting their missions, we've both had kind of independent discussions, and I thought it would be great to just bring the two of you together. You're both two visionary leaders in our space, and I think it would be great if you can help me kind of break this down for our audience. Before we get started, Garth, give us a little bit of background about yourself and AHA.
Sure. So for me, not that this is important to anyone, but the first thing I did in my career was I worked on Ronald Reagan's Star Wars Defense Initiative program. Yes, I worked on a space-based laser. I actually did that.
So cool.
and then I went into, before it was a real big thing, I went into environmental engineering, and I got to work on some of the most polluted sites on Earth, which is, if you turn the lights off, that's why I glow. It's not because of my personality. It's because I was exposed to a lot of junk. And then in the late 90s was when I first got involved with associations, and I've been involved ever since. So about probably two-thirds of my career, 25 years, give or take, has been in associations. And for the most part, it was with professional associations, although some kind of hybrids. Most, but not all, in human health, which is a lot of what you see based in Chicago, where you all are based. And then more recently with AHA, which is animal health. And I like to say that I got smart and made the switch. No offense to all those in human health, but this part of the ecosystem, healthcare ecosystem, is a lot more fun. But anyway, we have absolutely a wonderful organization. We've been around 90 years. And to your earlier comments, we are doing some pretty significant changes. We're changing, not changing. It's like saying, I'm happy, not happy. I'm sad, not sad. We're changing, not changing. But there's some significant work that we're doing. And hopefully it can be inspirational to other organizations looking to evolve, transform, whatever word you want to use, innovate, all the words du jour, right? All mingled together in a nice paella of words. So
thanks, Garth. Sharon, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about you?
So I've been managing director at .org Source for over 7 years now. Prior to that, as you mentioned before, I was working directly for the Association for Supply Chain Management. I did that for about 8 years. And then prior to that, I was working as a nonprofit consultant, which is really how I've spent the majority of my career. I actually started my career out of college as a world history teacher. I was thinking about that the other day. And so I kind of maintained that love of history and especially world history. What was really exciting to me was the ASCM is very much an international association. So it was fun for me to be able to do the kind of traveling that I was able to do across the globe and be able to kind of experience those cultures directly. And I'll always be very grateful for that. But at this point in my career, I'm just super excited working with new associations as they come to us as clients, focusing on what they want to accomplish and kind of the environment in which they're practicing today, and how is that changing, and how do they need to kind of evolve to be able to meet the needs of their members and customers? So it's a very dynamic association environment today.
So let's tackle this question that I have for you guys in three parts. So starting with, how is the role of associations in society changing? Do you think that it's expanding, contracting, or needs to be completely reshaped? So Sharon, why don't you start?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So I think I like, Garth, the changing, not changing, because while I do think it's a more challenging environment for associations to practice in, and I definitely am seeing and believing, and we've done some research on this that says the, you know, kind of unquestioned trust that society had for professional and trade associations in the United States that the members had, that's no longer there. So as trust has declined in all sorts of kind of institutions, that's been true of associations as well. So that's kind of a major change. But the not changing part is that essentially associations continue to be about community building and engagement. So if you think about, this is a pretty subtle difference, but when I was coming up in the association world in the 80s and the 90s, associations were all about networking, right? It was like, when you talk about that key, almost intangible benefit, although it had some tangible results, networking was kind of at the core. People kept their memberships current because they wanted to have that supportive network. And you know, we went through this period of time, which is less true right now, but there was a long stretch of time. It wasn't, you know, what you know, it's who you know. Remember that mantra? And that you had to have that netra to have the network to have professional success. What I see changing with associations now is it's networking is important, but done as it's changed and evolved into community engagement, meaning that our network isn't just there to help us be successful in our career or get the next job. It's become a support group to help association members kind of face the challenges that they have in today's environment and to, you know, be able to gain the new skills that they need and kind of stay on top of the trends. Whereas I would say with networking, it's you as an individual in the center and you have this radiance of contacts. I think with the community building, it's really more about, you know, just kind of being a part of this larger group and benefiting from, you know, that encouragement and the wisdom that the group has. And this is probably also related to some generational shifts and sensibilities with millennials as the majority of the workforce right now. So that's an example of changing, not changing, you know, for me and what's going on with associations. Leveraging a strength, which was always the people, you know, starting to focus in a little bit of a different direction on what that means.
So Garth, what are your thoughts on that? What's your perspective?
I pretty much agree. I think I'd go the route of yes anding that and say, I think there's some drivers that are, I would hope for many associations, they're seeing them and they're responding to certain drivers. So I'll give a handful of examples. Under two scenarios. The themes are, as crass as it may be, the themes were associations were a place to get stuff and to get me places. And that kind of aligns with what you were talking about, Sharon. So the get stuff, right? I got a magazine, which now, you know, most magazines are outdated. I get online newsletters, which are a dime a dozen. And with AI, they're a penny a dozen. They get me online education and certificates, which are becoming commoditized. They get me representation in DC, which anymore, because of the dysfunction in our government, as you see lobbyists move forward, the amount of money being spent by associations on lobbying is less and less impactful. I'm not saying the money being spent is less and less, but it's less impactful. So even if you join for representation purposes, you know, so this idea of getting stuff, and I have a whole line of thought around this idea that I join for $300 to get a list of stuff or discounts, which is, in my way of thinking, the wrong business model to begin with. But even now, I think that's rapidly changing because people don't need or want the stuff because it's all commoditized. Almost everything that we can make as associations is commoditized. It's just that way. You're not playing in a unique sandbox anymore. And then to get me places, you already said it, that mode is different, right? There are other models of networking and other models of job searching and other models of, you know, getting your credentials, et cetera. So I look at the path of associations, whether they are trade or professional or hybrid, as building value for society. And so instead of saying we're here to lead, which, by the way, I did a little bit of research for this podcast. I went and I looked at about 50 different association websites, professional associations, and believe it or not, two-thirds of them had the words lead in their mission. So we'll get to that later, but that's a very self-centric view of the world. I will lead. My association will lead. We will lead. There's no value in that. So when I look at where we must go versus where we're being pushed to go or whatever, I think you have to build value for society. And that may or may not be through the professionals you represent anymore. It may be with them. It may be in some other shape or form, which I can talk about in a little bit. The way I see it is you need to have a value proposition that is for the greater good. And being a leader, for example, which a lot of associations have that in their mission statement, that's not for the greater good. It's self-interest. And personally, I push up against that. And I'll give a specific example of that in a little bit.
Do you think that associations will need to be revisiting their missions just from, you know, can a group's idea of kind of a future organization change while their purpose remains the same?
Absolutely. I'll give an example, and I'm not too shy. I'll call out an association that I used to work for. The Healthcare Financial Management Association is an association of finance professionals in human health. Their mission is leading the financial management of healthcare. Frankly, I don't know what that means. And I don't know what good that does for anyone or anything. There was a 2 to 3 year initiative by the CEO, who has since retired, to develop HFMA to be a bit more cause related around helping to improve the cost effectiveness of health. Now, you can't do that without finance people. You also can't do it without physicians and IT people, et cetera, but you can lead the conversation around what does it mean to improve the cost effectiveness of health in the US. You can develop ideas, concepts, programs around that concept to help hospitals improve the cost effectiveness of the services that they deliver. Because frankly, just to go into some facts here, we've got $1 trillion in waste in a $4 or $5 trillion industry. There's $1 trillion of waste. There's a lot we can do to improve cost effectiveness. But unfortunately, the board decided after Joe retired, the board decided to go back to and fall back on this idea of just represent people whose job it is to maintain the financial sustainability and the cash flow and the revenue cycle of a hospital that has nothing to do with betterment for society. That to me is a major miss. And that is repeated over and over again by associations falling into their comfort zone and saying, well, it's easier to represent a profession and or a professional than it is to try to have an impact on making things better in our society with and through those individuals, or also just in the industry or in the ecosystem in which that we are part of. I look at other organizations with that type of mission, and it seems too self-interested, too selfish. I'll just say it, call it what I think it is personally. Because leading is not a mission. Leading is a result of doing something excellent. To say I'm going to be a leader, I'm the leader, that self-proclamation, I don't buy it. I don't buy it from any organization that's out there today. And I won't buy it from any organization that says, stakes that claim as their mission.
Thanks, Garth. I guess, Sharon, what are your thoughts and what are you seeing when you're working with orgs on strategy?
Well, it's so interesting. I had so many things kind of going on in my head as Garth was talking, because my thoughts, I do think, align with Garth's. And I'm going to come back to the changing, not changing. When I started working with associations, and, you know, because I am located in Chicago, they were mostly healthcare associations and mostly physician groups. And when we were doing strategy, let's say back in the 90s, every mission of any healthcare organization had the patient in it. You know, it was improving patient health. It was all these things. And I really remember distinctly when the conversation started to shift. And the reason it started to shift was we're not directly impacting patient health. We're directly impacting physicians who impact patient health. And so it started to move down that, as you're saying, more profession-centric role. So we lost the greater good or the public engagement in the organization from a mission perspective, and it started becoming very, very focused. And then when it became very, very focused on, in this case, the physician, then we really, as we start, if we say, well, our mission is really physician focused, then our goals are going to be physician focused. Our strategies are going to be physician focused. Our products and services are going to be very much physician focused. And so we really started to narrow the association's focus to what we can provide from a value proposition for the individuals that we're serving, that we're impacting. And so you can really see where it became the profession is the center of the universe, right? I think what's interesting right now, and this has its roots, I think, you know, if you go back and you read, starting with Why, the Simon Sinek book or whatever, what he did a very good job of capturing is that people aren't motivated necessarily by helping somebody else succeed. So what they're compelled by is really contributing to something that's bigger than themselves and something that's a common good. And we're in a tricky time in our history, which I think was a long time in coming. It didn't just happen in 2016. I mean, I think it was building a building. It's that period where we don't all agree on public policy. So I think what you talked about lobbying before. Well, I think one of the reasons that lobbying efforts for associations are diminished is because there's a whole lot more pushback. There used to be a time, again, in the 90s when I was starting, that if the association took a position on some type of legislation, for example, or was trying to influence, that the association member, whether they agreed or disagreed, let's say politically, they trusted that the association had researched it and was coming down on the side of something that was generally good for society. That trust is no longer here. I talked to a board member from the American Medical Association that said, you know, essentially that the AMA, it's gone through periods of struggle with declining membership and whatnot. It kind of breaks down along those political lines because the AMA no longer represented all of the members politically, and members used it as an excuse not to renew. But what we see kind of emerging now, I think that's very hopeful to your point, Garth, about, you know, kind of serving society as a whole, is that while we're moving away from, let's say, lobbying, and a lot of organizations are pulling back on their lobbying efforts because of technology, because of the digital world that we live in, direct public engagement is now more accessible than it ever was to organizations. So from a strategy perspective, as organizations are planning, what I'm seeing more and more of is the association taking it to the public at large, to the customer of their customer, to the people they want to influence. And how does this show up? In a lot of ways, it shows up in terms of educating the public. We see if it's a physician-based group, they have their patient sites, patient websites that they're serving the patient directly with information. We see a lot of professional campaigns where we're helping the public to understand why the profession is important and how the profession serves them. So I think we certainly public policy and lobbying is still there, but now we're moving to direct public engagement. And I think that that's really interesting. And I do wonder, how does this expand the world of the association when we go directly to our customer's customer and, you know, kind of try to improve society from that perspective?
Yeah, I guess to add to that, Sharon, I am also hearing or just having discussions with organizations that, of course, they're calling me for various problems, right? Like, can you help us solve our IT issue or our marketing issue or whatever it might be? But in those discussions, there is a lot of conversation around, I was having a conversation with an accounting group, for example, who said, yeah, we're struggling because we see the kids, parents are telling their kids not to go to school for accounting because AI is going to take it over. But now we've got to combat that and tell them, well, that's not the case. And this is why. And as he explained it to me, I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. But then if my parent hat was on, and I didn't know what he just told me, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I would have probably told my kid not to go into accounting either. So, you know, it's just that. So to your point, kind of that public outreach and where is our role for whichever profession that we're serving, I think is a very interesting conversation. And I've done a lot of work with the medical societies, and that's always a back and forth. How much effort do we put in focusing on educating the public compared to focusing on educating our members or worrying about policy or those types of things? So Garth, any additional thoughts on that?
Well, just with AHA, we accredit animal hospitals and veterinary practices, but somewhere between 15 and 20% in North America of practices are accredited. It's purely voluntary, unlike human health, where you've got JCO, right? You've got to be accredited by the Joint Commission to bill. We don't have that issue. But those members, not all of them, some of the members want AHA to market to pet owners to say, your job, AHA, is to differentiate us from all the other veterinary practices out there so that pet owners choose us, right? It's like a demand pull. You're creating this pull by the consumer for us. Whenever I have a chance to have that discussion one-on-one, I understand the sentiment. Truly, I do. But there's not enough zeros in our reserves and in our bank account to pull off a massive consumer campaign, like consumer-oriented organizations, AARP, or large organizations like the American Dental Association that might be able to pull those types of things off. So where I go, though, is I say, well, you're not an international or even a national organization. Typically, you're an independent practitioner. It's your job in your community to help people understand the difference between an accredited and a non-accredited practice. We can help you with that. In our perspective, I'm going back to this value statement. We don't want to create things for our members. We do. I mean, we've actually stopped creating a lot of the stuff we used to create. We actually gave up $1 million in revenue in bookstore stuff that we sold in order to focus on developing value, more intrinsic value for our members. How we see it is they are part of AHA. In this case, they're part of AHA because they want to enter into a process, an introspective process, if you will, of continuous improvement, which is a journey. It does not end. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, our value is not that we create a magazine or even standards or that you can use the sticker on your wall to say you're accredited. Our value is that we're kind of like an accountability buddy. So think about it this way. If you decide tomorrow to start working out a workout regimen and you hire a coach to help you do that, you still are the person that made that decision to go out and work out. You're still the person that has to wake up at 5:30 a.m. The personal trainer isn't going to come to your house and shake you awake at 5:30 a.m. You have to do that yourself. But they are there to help you be accountable throughout some part of the process. They're not living with you 24/7. That's a value opportunity, right? To help people know that you're going to be there with them, but you're not going to do everything for them. It's a very, very different outlook compared to what a lot of associations try to be through the stuff that they make. When I hear associations, some do it very, very well. So it's not to say that those that want to, you know, have a more direct to consumer impact, you should or shouldn't do it. But I would say be really, really careful with that. That's a rabbit hole you can go down where you got to ask yourself, is that really where we're trying to build value?
You know, it's interesting. I think it's been a 25-year, at least a 20-year march towards defining value as product. And we talked a little bit about this at our leadership collab last year in, what was that, February of 2023, yeah. Where we were talking about, I like the way you talk about stuff, but it's kind of like everything in the kitchen sink. When you start marketing products to your membership as that's the value, and you're not getting the results that you're looking for, what do you do? Like maybe your retention rate isn't as high, or the, you know, your top line revenue isn't where you want it to be. So you start adding more stuff. And you add more stuff and you add more stuff. And then what happened right. to the membership model? Well, now we're going to give you choices. You can get a bronze level of stuff. You can get a silver level of stuff. And you can get a gold level of stuff. There are still associations marching towards that model that are saying, oh, well, we'll do that. The problem is that that model is really hard to get out of. Once you've segmented your stuff and have coordinating, you know, kind of membership levels, that's really difficult to then work your way out of without making a pretty major impact to your retention of your membership. Or to say that you pay $200 in dues, you're getting $2,000 worth of stuff. And now I'm going to ask you to pay $250 of dues, but what I'm going to give you is more intangible than the stuff. We think we can convince you it's more impactful, but you have to trust us enough to make that transition. So I really want to say to associations that are contemplating the bronze, silver, gold model is please don't. Do yourself a
please
favor.
Please don't.
Not do that.
I'm there
and good
with
luck
you.
To those that you have to get out of it.
I'll just say preach. Preach, sister. Preach.
It's really the worst. The wonderful thing about being a part of APEX ASCM from, you know, I started there in 2007 and then I left in 2017. And the great thing was there's so many lessons from manufacturing along the lines of stuff and how do you keep adding value and adding value and value. And they really hold out. And you could see it happening, man. You could just see it happening and there was no way to turn it around.
I'm going to add a layer on that tort, that chocolate tort for a second, and say there's another chasing that goes on, and that is the chasing for more members. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes the reason is, right, more members, more dues revenue, sell more stuff, get more advertising and sponsorship out there so that now we can get more advertising revenue, sponsorship dollars, exhibitors, which again, you fall into the trap of reliance on that stuff. You don't see for-profit membership organizations, of which you could call them subscription models. I don't care what you call them. You don't see them creating this hodgepodge variety of all this stuff, which dilutes their core business model of providing mm-hmm. some subscription thing that people really, really want and doing it exceptionally well, no matter how intrinsic or extrinsic that, or how tangible or intangible that value proposition might be. To me, you know, going back to you're chasing either the list of stuff to make for your members and or just member growth. And I would ask, why are you chasing member growth? If you're chasing member growth, if you want to grow 5, 10, 20, 30% a year, which I see associations doing, they do it in individual models and they'll say, well, we'll go and we'll sell a membership to the business. And then everyone who's a finance person will be a member. They have no attachment to you other than the fact that you get to represent them in your numbers. It means nothing. The question I ask is, what is the value you're creating for those individuals and those businesses if you're chasing the membership growth through the numbers? Because people are justifying their existence. I see it where, oh, we represent 60,000. Oh, we hit 70,000. We hit 80,000. Well, who cares? To what end? Why? What
are you
doing
with that?
Do you think
that this is partly driven, though? I mean, when I try to figure it out, it kind of makes sense of what I'm seeing. CEOs of associations get together, they talk, they network, they share balance sheets. You know, they are comparing themselves to one another.
I call them liars clubs.
Yeah, maybe. And one of the ways that I have noticed that association CEOs delineate themselves, and I will say ASAE promotes this, right? They delineate themselves by top line revenue. You know, what's a top line revenue? In my association, $4 million, let's say under $5 million, 5 to 10 million or 5 to 15, you know, what's the big boy club? Is that over 50? You know, what that is. So association CEOs measure their own success by growth, right? And it's typically growth of that top line revenue. And that's reasonable. It's a metric, right? It's something you could use. But you know, when you talk about increasing membership or increasing sales or whatnot, it doesn't really talk about impact on the profession, right? It doesn't really speak to advancement. And are professionals able to do a better job of what they do? You know, and again, working a lot in healthcare, are we making a positive impact on the patient or in our healthcare system? And I don't know whether that would ever be I'm sure it could be as attractive as, you know, measuring growth, but we've, you know, kind of gotten stuck in this revenue growth model as being the primary way that we measure our success.
Right. As opposed to, you said the word, right? What's your impact? So you mm-hmm. can measure it on the profession. You can try to do a societal impact. You can do, you know, perception of, in our case, you know, do people trust that when they take their pet to, you know, veterinarian, that they're going to be well cared for? Are more pets seeing veterinarians than used to? Are veterinary teams healthy and getting healthier and performing well together? Those are different outcomes that may result in growth if we're able to achieve. So you brought up Simon, who I absolutely adore, earlier, Simon Sinek. And I'll say, if you read anything about some of his latest work, Later Than the Why, which got him on the map for sure, read about A Just Cause. Mm-hmm. So when you think about a just cause as opposed to a mission, some people might call it a purpose statement, but get rid of vision and mission and blah, 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 and 300 words that no one can remember. Think about a just cause. It is purpose oriented. It's inclusive. It brings others along. It doesn't say we're leading to the exclusion of everyone else. So, because there can only be one leader, so to speak, it's a cause that you really can't argue with. If you argue against it, you're going to look pretty stupid. It doesn't end. You're in this kind of consistent pursuit of what your cause is, and it is for others. You're doing something that is for others. It's not just for your own good or the good of your organization. And I think that's where all too many associations miss the mark, is they aren't thinking of the cause that they're involved in and honing in on that in a way where whatever revenue you derive, whatever support you derive, whatever members come along with you, they're doing it because they're attached to the cause, not because you got advertising in a magazine over here or a free newsletter over there. And you can be more selective. You don't have to worry about getting to 50, 100 or 200,000 members. Think about the power in 20,000 members if they join for that cause first and foremost. You're going to find more impact with that type of more focused view on the world. The chasing of the numbers is what sticks in the back of my mind every day. And we are hit with it regularly. You know, CEO update, boy, they sure do love to send out emails about top line revenue and who's making how much money and who's coming and who's going. And I just look at that and I'm like, what a waste of ink, absolute waste of ink. It's not doing anybody any good other than feeding the beast of saying, well, I need to go work for a bigger organization to make more money, as opposed to what if they, what if they actually wrote something, frankly, of value that said, here's the biggest impact that these 100 associations had over the course of the last year. I want to know that. I want to know how a certain association created an impact in society and how they measured it. That's what I want to know.
And you know, it's so interesting. I say this all the time as I'm trying to figure out the world today. And I just want to live long enough so historians can retrospectively look back and tell us what this period of our existence has meant. Like, I want historians from the future to make sense of kind of the rise of nationalism or the pandemic or, you know, all of these different things, because I think we're still in many ways in the eye of the storm. And what I would really like to go back and take a look at is when we're talking about border closing, you know, the humanitarian crisis that it was starting to evolve from that, we saw a large number of healthcare organizations and legal organizations specifically sign on to letters, basically. And the letters were directed at, you know, it was PR. So they're directed at the public, but they're written to, you know, legislators or the president or whatnot, saying, here is the danger of what we're seeing. Or when we talk about, you know, the children that were being detained and separated from their families and the outpouring, we did see a lot of associations kind of weighing in on that. Now, what I know is that it was super unpopular in some of these organizations. Because what they were hearing from their members is they should not take a public stand. And we've also seen that with environmental issues, climate crisis, and various things. So I'm absolutely with you. I think that being a part of a cause, if you believe what we believe, let's do this together and let's move forward. I think it's the right message and it's the right approach, especially when you think about how high the stakes are from a societal perspective right now. I think it's not getting through. I think it's a really hard sell. And it's like the transition from the bronze, silver, and gold membership model. It's a hard transition to make. It's the right transition. Yeah. It's a hard one to make.
So follow the money for a second. When you look at research reports, just go do your own, you know, go on to GuideStar and start looking up 990s. You look at $15 million plus associations out there. How many of them have 12, 16, 18, 24, sometimes even 36 months of revenue in reserves, right? Top line revenue in reserves.
But listen, or it, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years in the medical at once.
I mean, they got 60, 80, 100, $150 million in reserves. What are you doing with that? I mean, if I was a member of those organizations, I'd be like raising my hand saying, why are you in this game? It's almost like you're in this game playing to play. You're just here to play around. What are you doing that's going to move the needle from that societal perspective and make the world a better place that we, as a profession or as a trade or whatever, that we're part of? You've got money. You're not going to bat a thousand when you go out and spend that money, but please don't be holding on to that as traditional reserves. Go out and use it to make things better. That's why I said, well, follow the money. When you talk about it's a hard road, well, yeah, it is. But a lot of organizations can plan a 2 to 3 year change with the amount of reserves that they've got in the bank. They can live their way through that financially.
Yeah, there's no question. And I think also, you know, kind of pulling together, oh, this could be a book, couldn't it? There was a long time that association CEOs in some way, shape or form felt lesser than their for-profit partners. Or for-profit colleagues, let's say. I think in the, again, from the time of about 2000, as we were productizing the association, we were also trying to operate more and more like a for-profit. I think over that period of time, the mantra of no margin, no mission came up. And there's truth in that. I'm not saying that there's not. But all of a sudden, again, another mark of a successful CEO is how much money do they have in the bank? Even if they don't have plans for the money in the bank, how much do they have in the bank? And I will say that I find that medical associations, physician-based groups tend to want to keep a lot of money in the bank. So they like having the 4 and 5 years of operating budget, annual operating budget in the bank, And I kind of think that comes from the time that they had buildings. I mean, we're moving away from associations owning buildings to a large extent, and associations even being in buildings, we're moving away from. So, I mean, I think it's all kind of complicated, but one of the themes that we're definitely seeing here is, in talking about, I'd be interested in hearing from you on this, what is the role of the CEO in moving associations towards a service-based viable future?
I do not serve in my CEO role in order to keep the role. Mm-hmm. If I do that, I'm doing a disservice to AHA. Now, do I want to go out and just do things that are contrary to the board, or, you know, just go play crazy in a sandbox by myself? No, that's not what that means. What it means is I deeply believe that AHA cannot and should not be a traditional association. And I deeply believe that we need to provide value to our members and to society in a way that's different than what you might conjure up in your head as a traditional professional or hybrid professional trade association. And the way we look at that, I've mentioned it a little bit before, but the way we look at that is we are an accountability buddy for folks that want to continuously improve. We can create value in that that isn't through the productization, if you will, of content. We do make content, but it's not so that we can sell it in bookstores. And we make content for the purpose of supporting people in their journey of continuous improvement. The money comes after that. It's a harder balance. I believe the CEO, to your question, Sharon, the CEO has to make that choice. Who else is going to do that? That would be my question back to you. When we redesigned our strategy, we did it through the eyes of what do our members need from us intrinsically? What's in their hearts and in their heads that they truly need every day? They need a less complicated life. They need to be able to feel like they're contributing to the continuous improvement of the healthcare of the patients that they serve. So how can we be there for them in simplifying that journey toward excellence that they're striving for? That's our role. Other stuff comes after that. We have to make that choice as an organization. And the only way, I believe, the way you do that is through the CEO, through the leader, who has to be an empathetic leader, meaning you're empathizing with the members in their world. What do they really need from you? They don't need more stuff. They don't need representation. Maybe they do, but you get my gist, right? Deeply empathize with those members and try to see what they need on a day-to-day basis, because most of it is not the stuff that we make.
We need new and different metrics of success. You know, you certainly need the board aligning on those metrics with the CEO, but it's a lot to put on any individual board chair or the length of stay for board members, but the board, ideally, there's going to be alignment. You're not the only CEO that we admire and respect at WorkSource that has said that it can't be focused on keeping the job, Sherry. I'm thinking of specifically. It's an interesting perspective, because even when we think about our political leaders and where do they get all tangled up in doing the right thing when they start being concerned about whether they're going to be reelected.
That's right.
And then it's all about the reelection and not about the job that they're doing. And certainly we're experiencing a lot of that right now. The only measure of success is that you're reelected in that case. And then it's everything you do is, you know, lined up with that measure of success.
This is why I wanted to have you both on. This has been a great conversation. But as you guys were talking about purpose-based organizations and trust and all those things, I come from a lens of, I just saw my daughter and all of her friends in different professions, in different, you know, some of them for profit, some of them going into nonprofit, but they were all very concerned. And I think about, you know, how do I get them to join associations? Because that's my passion, right? So I'm like, you've got to join the American Marketing Association. And they're like, why? Like, we can get stuff, right? To your point, Garth, they can get the stuff. But what pulls them into a job or an organization is the purpose, is the cause, is the why. They are deeply motivated by that and their choices there that they're making. And it's interesting, like I said, it's an interesting lens for me. I'm an overthinker too. I'm like, that's interesting to see that they're making that choice or this choice. None of the choices have been around money. The parents, myself and others, are like, well, how much are you going to make there? that's not part of the discussion. It's what they're going to be able to do for society or the profession that they're serving and that sort of thing. So as we're kind of pulling this all together and we talk about membership and membership recruitment and why people join, I think the atmosphere today is different because to your point, Garth, you can get a lot of stuff. Like I get a lot of stuff and a lot of training and education, and it's not coming from ASAE, right? Like, nope. I'm not going to ASAE to learn about AI. I'm not going to ASAE to get my professional speaking training. I'm doing some work with another coach on One Belief Away. Like, I'm getting all of these other resources that are very personal to me. That doesn't mean I'm not going to join, but I'm not joining to get the stuff, right? I might be joining because I want to see you in an event. I don't know. Like, there's just other reasons. So anyway, I think it's just been an interesting conversation.
Think about
so as we kind of like wrap up, I'd love to hear any final thoughts from you and from Sharon, and then maybe we'll need to do this again.
Just think about if we redirected our energy and an opportunity towards that more intrinsic value. I'll give you a quick example. In veterinary teams, when you ask people who have said, I'm staying in my current clinical practice because I like it, right? I'm staying. You ask them, well, why are you staying? Compensation is not at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. Finding meaning in their work, being able to practice modern medicine, and working in an exceptional team are the three main reasons why they say they're staying. And I'm going to guess that those three main reasons someone stays in their job in veterinary medicine are not all that different than why, Sharon, you might stay in yours or I might stay in mine, right? Finding meaning in your work, practicing with modern tools, whatever the case may be, and working with a great team. If you're going to serve an individual as a member of an organization, and you're not going to serve some grander purpose, then understand them at that level, at the very least. Understand that, oh, people want to find meaning in their work. People want to work with a good team. People want to practice with, you know, et cetera. And then find a way to be there to help them in that part of their journey. It's not going to be through stuff or through what happens to be our most traditional means. And it is changing over time. Those reasons why we stay in jobs or why we stay in careers are different over time. And so if we're not evolving to understand, if we're not A, understanding the difference, again, empathetically through the eyes of the people we're supposed to serve, let alone the communities and the grander society, then you're not going to, I'm not saying you will fail as an association, but you're certainly not going to thrive. And thriving, you can grow and still not be thriving. I mean, let's be real, right? People have cancerous masses the size of a basketball growing inside of them, and they're not thriving, but they're growing. So, I know that's a terrible analogy to end with, but I mean, let's think about what thriving really means and what value really means. That's kind of my core message I go back to. But you can only do that when you understand the people deeply.
Sharon, I'm thinking about the people, yeah, that are listening to this and feeling like we just upset their apple cart. That's like, oh my God, where do we go from here? Because we basically said that the pathway that most associations are on or have been on for the last 20 years isn't working. Isn't going to work. I actually think the cancer analogy, though a little harsh, is actually a good one. It's a good kind of description to a certain extent about how you can grow, but it not end well and not be sustainable in some ways and damaging. So if you listen to this conversation and it feels rather dire, reach out, include us in your network or your community. Let's have more conversation. Email us, because I don't feel hopeless. I've never got the impression, Garth, from you that you feel hopeless. I think there's a better path forward is really kind of the message. And that better path forward, as we're quoting Simon Sinek, I mean, yes, it's starting with why makes a lot of sense, but probably maybe for me, even more impactful than starting with why was the infinite game and thinking, you know, about what we're doing, not from a winning and losing perspective, you know, but being able to continue to play, be able to continue to have impact, being able to continue to serve. Associations over the last 200 years have gone plus, you know, through lots of changes, lots of significant periods of change. For me personally, it's hard to really, I'm not getting that 30,000 foot view yet. And that's what I'm waiting for, for some of the dust to clear or whatever's going on to look down and to say, okay, here's the landscape now. You know, this is the path forward.
Well, great, you guys. This was such a great discussion, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed the discussion and the thoughts, and we didn't scare them too much. but to Sharon's point, you know, reach out, love to continue the discussion, and hopefully you guys will join me again in the future. So I appreciate your guys' time today. It was great.
Thank you. Thank you, Sharon.
Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered tips and information that will add value to your leadership style and your association. .org Source specializes in positioning teams for success with solutions for technology, strategy, and marketing. please contact us at info@orgsource.com or visit www.orgsource.com to find out how to keep your organization on track to Association 4.0.